U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reverses course and says she will hold a vote on the House floor to authorize an impeachment investigation after all. Why did she change her mind? Plus, what's the political fallout from the killing by U.S. Special Forces of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of Islamic State? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal opinion pages, and I'm here with my colleague Bill McGurn. Bill, how are you?
Hi, Paul.
And Kim Strassel. Kim, how you doing?
Good. How are you, Paul?
You know, not so bad.
Good.
Considering my age and other infirmities, I'm all right. So let's talk about Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, changing her mind. I think it's remarkable in a way, Bill, because she had been so stalwart for so long in saying we don't need to do it. They got the Washington Post and all the editorial pages to say this is a canard. You don't have to do it. We don't have to have the vote. We can have all of this in secret. And suddenly, presto, she changes. Why do you think she did it?
Well, it's kind of like the Hunter Biden defense. I did nothing wrong, but I'm not going to do it again, right? To assure you. I think
we don't need the vote. We don't need the vote, but we're going to have one.
I think it hurts them. I think people sense there's something really irregular about this impeachment. On the legal front, you know, if you want to get those subpoenas enforced, the president is saying it's not a legitimate impeachment. So it kind of takes away his argument if they have a real vote and do it properly. I think mostly she was embarrassed by Lindsey Graham, who put a resolution before the Senate with 50 co-sponsors condemning the House for the way it's going about impeachment. And I think she realized, look, this is undermining the credibility of our case. I'm not sure that this is going to repair it. I mean, we'll have to see how many Republicans vote for it or support it if it gives them what they want. Because she's basically saying, as I understand it, that she's affirming, it's a resolution to affirm that what they're doing is legitimate. So it sort of begs the question.
Well, but it at least does put the House on record, and presumably once, and she said in her letter to her Democratic colleagues, which by the way should have been to the whole House,
right?
Because the whole House will vote.
Absolutely.
On it. So she said in the letter that she is going to lay out, that the resolution will lay out, Kim, the parameters of the investigation going forward, what the rules will be, how the rights of the minority, in this case the Republicans, will be affected. And I would assume that has to include their ability to subpoena and call witnesses. If she does that, then my own view is that is a step forward, because it follows the Nixon and Clinton precedents, which Lindsey Graham so effectively pointed out on the Senate floor were not the way they were following it, the rules they were following so far in this case. I guess the question is, how much does it repair the damage that has been done to their credibility? But I think this helps them myself.
Oh, I agree. And I think the important thing here, there's actually two important things that are happening, not just that they are taking accountability and putting the House on record, assuming they get the votes. I'm assuming that they will, putting the House on record for moving forward with impeachment, an impeachment inquiry. But also the rules, as you said, according to her, this is going to lay out the method by which they hold hearings, the method by which they disclose transcripts, the method, too, and this is important, by which they transfer evidence to the Judiciary Committee, which has traditionally always been in charge of writing articles of impeachment, because this has been an unusual process that the Intelligence Committee has been taking the lead here. So it's hopefully will clarify a process going forward. Now, Republicans, those that have been critical of this already, were not mollified and said, yeah, well, it's a little bit too late. in that you've already concocted a lot of your case behind closed doors. Now that you are declaring it's official, it still doesn't make up for past sins. And I think they have a legitimate point there in that a lot of this has been done without giving the White House the opportunity to be present at the hearings, to cross-examine witnesses. Those rights for Republicans had not been established already. So some of this has already happened without, I think, a fair process.
All right. And the vote will be later this week on the House floor. I guess it's planned to be Thursday. The transcript or the outline of the resolution will be offered before the Rules Committee first. So we'll begin to see the text of it. One question in my mind is how much of what has already taken place in the Intelligence Committee under Adam Schiff, where we've had partial release of witness testimony, transcripts being so closely held that, as Kim reported last week, members needed a staff chaperone to even read the transcript if they wanted to. How much of that is going to be publicly released and channeled into the public evidence that will, I guess, go eventually through the Judiciary Committee to form articles of impeachment?
Well, she talked about transferring information to the House Judiciary Committee.
But how again, much of it?
Right, exactly. We don't know that. I mean, that's the question is, what is this resolution going to be? I mean, there are some who suspect it's going to be like backdating an invoice, you know, to try to ex post facto bestow some legitimacy on what they've already done. So we'll have to see what rules they agree on, if they've given the Republicans everything they want, which is based on the Clinton and Nixon impeachments, or whether they pull it there. We don't know. I mean, a lot will depend on the text, whether Republicans accept it as legitimate. It does help the Democrats take away an argument from President Trump on resisting the subpoenas. Now, in practical terms, I don't think that's going to make a difference, because since they're also saying we want this done by Christmas, they're not going to go to the courts to try to enforce that.
To try to enforce the subpoenas.
I think they're not going to go. I mean, they had one subpoena that they did that of Barr, the grand jury material from the Mueller report, but they've moved on from Mueller. That's not kind of where they're going on impeachment now.
Yeah, they won that case at the federal district court level last Friday with an opinion by Judge Howell, I guess it
right.
was. But the Trump administration has immediately appealed
right.
that. And they would have the ability to appeal that if they lost at the appellate court level to go to the Supreme Court ultimately, if the Supreme Court.
And that's a wild card for two reasons. One is the judge, the reason she ruled. I think it's a very bad ruling. But one of her rationales was that impeachment is a judicial proceeding, and therefore they're entitled to this material. The DOJ is arguing the opposite. She also dismissed Doug Collins' amicus, where he argues that while the Constitution may not require a vote, it vests authority for impeachment in the House, and that in every other instance where a committee has authority, it's because it's been delegated by the House to the committee by some rule. So those are two openings where, you know, judges, I mean, you don't know what judges will do, but it gives two openings for some pretty big rulings.
We're talking about the impeachment inquiry by the House of Representatives of Donald Trump and the killing of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. So, Kim, as the House moves towards a vote this week on a resolution authorizing a impeachment investigation, the one big question politically will be how many votes will Speaker Pelosi get? And I would argue that she will get nearly all, or maybe all, of her caucus. almost all Democrats. And I say that because even if you are one of these congressmen or congresswomen who won in districts that Donald Trump carried in 2016 and you won in 2018, and your district may be against impeachment overall, your bigger immediate risk is a primary challenge. And if you would vote against authorizing even an inquiry into impeachment, that's a pretty powerful argument to give a potential opponent in one of these districts. So I think she'll get almost all of the Democrats. And then the question becomes, how many Republicans does she get to?
Right. And at last count, the New York Times has helpfully been keeping a list of everyone who supports and doesn't. And there are still 8 Democrats, mostly from conservative districts, who have not endorsed an inquiry. But I would wager that there is going to be an awful lot of arm twisting going on behind the scenes by Mrs. Pelosi and her team this week, because it would be very embarrassing to not have the entirety of her party in favor of going forward with this. But in addition, as you said, there's going to be that pressure on those 8 or 9 holdouts to go along with this or risk a primary challenge. Now, I would note that the same will apply to Republicans out there. So far, we don't have any that are publicly on record of endorsing an impeachment inquiry. Justin Amash, when he was still a Republican, did endorse it, but he's since become an independent. And so far as I know, he's the only one that continues to be in that position of endorsing an inquiry. But Republicans, too, are going to face an enormous backlash if they vote yes on this and would also potentially face primary challenges. So this could be, in the end, a straight party line vote.
Yeah, Justin Amash, he's already for the impeachment of the president. But it would be, I agree with you, Kim, it would be highly embarrassing if eight, as many as 8 Democrats did not vote in favor of even this inquiry. That would be something of a credibility blow. And why is this important? I mean, ultimately, they would still have the opportunity, if they vote for an inquiry, to vote against impeachment at the end. But this sends an important signal of the degree of the political support for this whole impeachment process going forward. And that, in turn, will influence public opinion, number one, which is ultimately the most important thing, because this is basically comes down to impeachment as a political fight above all. And then also will send a signal bill to the Senate and how vociferous some of the senators should be in beginning to speak up on impeachment.
Yeah, I actually think that Mrs. Pelosi might be inclined, if there are 8 in difficult Trump districts, to let them go just to get what to get what she needs for the vote, right? The big vote will be impeachment later. I'm not sure even at this point for the ones in Trump district that vote. You can defend yourself, say, I want to learn the facts. You know, I want to investigate the president. I mean, the tough one is whether you vote to impeach him later on down the road. So, I mean, she got on the impeachment train. The train was being driven by others, and she got in front trying to lead it. She can't afford not to impeach. I think it would be a disaster for her party at this point, having put her credibility on the line. But she also has that thing where she's trying to protect some of her members. And if these members feel that this will cost them their seats, maybe as long as she has the numbers, to pass this.
Well, of course, she can't control who might then primary some of these members. So the members themselves, if they are primary, then they have to spend resources to defend themselves, and then they have to—
Right. That works the other way. For this, I'm presuming that if you don't support this impeachment, you're more worried about Trump voters, right? You're more worried about the threat from Trump than you are from a primary, right?
No,
if you're not going to vote for this.
Yeah.
So she might say, okay, we've got enough. We got 220. We can let some of these people go their own way.
She needs to win by more than 220. She needs to get them all, Bill, in my view. Almost all of them. She really does. All right. Well, let's move on to the weekend news of the killing in an American Special Forces raid of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, longtime head of Islamic State and longtime target of American intelligence and the military, and finally succeeded in getting his whereabouts into a hideout in Idlib province in northwestern Syria. tracked him down, and special forces followed him into a tunnel where he blew up a vest, killed himself and some children that he had taken in with him. Politically, obviously, Donald Trump delighted by this, an extensive remarks, press conference. Kim, you know, a lot of the critics said he was typically Trumpian, and some of the bragging that went on and the details he disclosed. But on the other hand, as I recall, Barack Obama didn't shrink from celebrating the capture or the killing of Osama bin Laden. And there were a lot of details leaked about that, even if Obama was more disciplined, as he always was, than Donald Trump.
Oh, right. I mean, look, it was a typical Trumpian briefing, full of lots of adjectives and a lot of happiness and crowing. And you know, it was very Donald Trump. But as you said, our past leaders have certainly celebrated such moments in the past, and not just Barack Obama. I seem to remember Joe Biden announcing that, you know, GM was alive and bin Laden is dead. So, you know, that was a campaign cry of theirs.
Right to the end of the campaign.
Right, exactly. So, and look, this was an unalloyed victory. This is a terrible terrorist, and we've been looking for him for a very long time. And, you know, it's good just for foreign policy, obviously, and it makes the world a safer place. But politically, it was remarkable to watch the speed and the effort to undermine what was this success, whether it was the Washington Post coming out and, you know, describing this guy as a scholar and an upstanding kind of dude, or just media criticism suggesting that, you know, Donald Trump had acted inappropriately by not informing Democrats before he did it. You know, the nitpicking was really quite something to witness.
Bill, I guess I'd argue that this will be certainly a short-term boost to the president, but in the long term, through the election, probably isn't all that consequential. Although the one thing I would say is, if in addition to this, is if you look at, and of course, this you have to knock on wood here, but you know, for a while now, we haven't had a significant successful terror attack on the U.S. homeland, either something that was planned overseas or inspired by overseas, and that's very gratifying. And I think it's no accident. This is the hard work of American intelligence and defense officials.
Yeah, the one thing I would take issue with you is where you say, you know, it won't have an effect by the end of the election. I think by the end of the week, my guess is it'll be forgotten. But I think your larger point is, you know, I was in the White House when we got some Al-Qaeda guys and everything. We were always getting the number three guy. They always said that was the worst job to have. But it is a big boost. And it does remind you, the same way with bin Laden, what an effort it is to put we have the attack capability, but then to get the intelligence, to have these guys in the right place, and to pull it off without any casualties on of our own.
It's
an extraordinary thing. So it's certainly a plus for Donald Trump, but it's also just reminds us what our men and women out there are doing, and that they're doing it for a long time, months and so forth. You know, we see the 6 hours or 7 hours it takes to, you know, go from the choppers and get in. But it's months of laying groundwork for that. So it's a good reminder. And of course, no one is arguing that ISIS is dead because right. The leader is dead. I mean, it's a fake argument. But it is gratifying. It's a blow to them when you get their leader. And as I understand, we got the guy that was probably going to be the leader too.
Yeah.
That is a tough, you know, when you're on the run like those guys, the leadership does matter.
Yeah, it shows that the reach doesn't end anywhere around the world. And it shows that that there's no statute of limitations either. We will track
and
you
that's,
down whenever.
I think that's an important thing because we got bin Laden on Obama's watch after the and now we got Baghdadi on Trump's watch, but his main crimes against Americans were during the Obama administration. And it's a good reminder, you know, you harm an American, we're not going to forget. And justice may take a while, but it will be delivered.
Kim, any chance this will change Donald Trump's mind about his Syria policy?
I don't know if it changes his mind, but what's interesting about it and also a boost for the White House is it obviously changed the focus of the attention from the media and the headlines onto something other than his troop withdrawal from Syria. And that has at least given the White House a little bit more breathing room to reconsider. We'd already heard information that, the president is thinking of leaving some troops there to have U.S. forces on the ground to control local oil fields, and that maybe tanks would be part of that job. Tanks aren't something that would normally be necessary for there, so maybe they're actually going to be there for other purposes. Withdrawal, it sounds as though maybe Donald Trump's plans for withdrawal aren't as simple as he would make them sound to the American public, that maybe there's some room there for the U.S. to continue playing a role. But it's given them a little bit more time to work on that while everyone is focused on this, success.
Yeah, and I know that there's more than one senator, Lindsey Graham and others, and also several people inside the administration, senior levels, who want to persuade Donald Trump that, see, the political benefit of this can redound to your benefit. It's not all downside when you have forward deployed forces. They can also be crucial and helpful in the war on terror. All right. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.